720 WGN. Hello there. It's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. Always grateful to you for sharing part of your Saturday with me. Well, Super Bowl weekend is upon us, and so we're going to be taking a look in the second half of the show. We're going to be looking at those Super Bowl commercials, because that's always a big topic of conversation and a lot is going on social media. A lot of them are already out. You can already watch them. I like to save it and see them live, but we're going to be talking about that. But right now we're joined by Elizabeth Dunn, a journalist covering food and innovation, who wrote a piece in Bloomberg about Dig In, which is a fast casual food company that's really trying to change the way food delivery works. And this is one of those really fascinating topics to me. Anytime that we see major innovation and disruption hitting something that seems pretty straightforward and simple, like lunch, getting food delivered to your office, it is really fascinating how many pieces go into doing that. Elizabeth, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So talk us through this, what Dig In is doing, because when we think about lunch, you think about, you know, running out to a deli, running out to fast food, bring in the brown bag, something like that. But this is really a lot of thoughtful engineering pieces and culinary arts and a lot of things going into this to create the experience with the delivery timeline in mind.
Yeah, so Dig In is a fast casual restaurant that's based in the Northeast, and they do that kind of salad or grain bowl style, you know, the sort of style of service that Chipotle started, where you pick different elements, assemble them in a bowl and take it back to your office. And in the past several years, they've really seen the number of deliveries they do go through the roof. So in some of their locations, almost a third of the orders that they take are for delivery. And, you know, they started to realize that they designed the restaurant and the food and everything about the way it worked with walk-in in mind, and that what they were able to deliver, you know, was not as good as the experience people had when they walked in. It was either, you know, cold when it got to them, or, you know, it took forever to get the deliveries out the door. And so they've just, from the bottom up, rethought the way that they approach delivery. And for Dig In, that's meant, you know, taking the delivery orders actually into an entirely separate kitchen facility and creating a new menu that is specifically intended for delivery. And so it's a big investment.
Right. And so what are some of these tactics? There's one that you mentioned in the story that I think is really interesting about thinking about food temperature and how to not undercook it, but cook it just enough so that it'll be right when it arrives. I think things like that are really fascinating because, I mean, to me, that says we're in this moment where you have to engineer things for delivery and for your delivery audience.
Right. So, I mean, you know, obviously the first thing they're doing is trying to get it to you as fast as possible, but they've realized that, you know, even getting it to you as fast as possible, it's probably going to take 30 minutes to get to your door. And a lot of food changes substantially in 30 minutes between when it's cooked and when it's delivered. I think anybody who's ever ordered French fries for delivery knows that. They never arrive the way that you would have them if you were eating them right away. So one thing that they're doing is in situations where it's safe and makes sense. So, for instance, they have a salmon dish that they designed, and they'll cook that salmon to 105 degrees, which is a what you might call a medium rare for salmon. And then they put it on like a very hot puree. And over the course of time, the puree heats the salmon and continues its cooking so that by the time it gets to you 25, 30 minutes later, the salmon is kind of the perfect flaky, medium texture that you want it to be.
And to me, this also quickly makes a leap to a conversation about workplace culture and how we are so reluctant to perhaps leave our desks.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is definitely, I think delivery is increasing in all parts of the day. So, you know, people are more often just wanting to stay on their couch and watch Netflix, or in the case of work, you know, not wanting to give up that 15, 20 minutes of productivity, which I think you could argue that, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world to stretch your legs, get up from your desk and go pick up your own lunch. But it's definitely something that fewer and fewer people are interested in doing these days.
Sure. And then what about companies like Grubhub and Caviar and things like that, the delivery services that really, you know, this is their game. And this seems like this is something that is encroaching on that, or maybe even threatening them a little bit, making them need to step up their game.
Yeah, that's definitely another part of the puzzle. That Grubhub, all these services that many of us use to order food, so that's, you know, Grubhub, DoorDash, Uber Eats, I mean, there's a lot of them now, they not only charge you a fee as the consumer, but they charge like a really hefty percentage of the revenue that you're paying to that restaurant. So a restaurant might pay 20 or 30% of your, you know, $13 salad to Grubhub or to Seamless Web or whoever it is. So, you know, that has made restaurants, as the number of deliveries that they do has increased, they're really rethinking how they can not be taking orders through those third-party services. You know, how can we get people to order directly from us through an app or through a website and not have to pay those really steep commissions?
Which I think is an aspect of delivery that a lot of people don't realize of that commission.
It's something that, it's something that until I started researching it, I had no idea. I figured, well, they're charging me $3.99. You know, they might charge the restaurant a little bit. But it turns out that it's really tough, especially for small independent restaurants. You're doing them a big favor. If you want to see your favorite small independent restaurant stay in business, you should really think about picking up the phone and calling them or trying to see if they take orders on their own website.
Absolutely. I mean, that was such a big takeaway from the story. I thought was so interesting. What else to you was very surprising about this when you started working on this piece?
Well, I think, you know, like the rapid increase in deliveries, in delivery volumes was really interesting to me. I mean, I guess I've experienced it as a consumer that 10 years ago, I probably mostly just did delivery for pizza. And now it's something that I do for a lot of different parts of my day. But, you know, I guess the other part of it is just how logistically complicated it can get in a restaurant that was built to do walk-ins that all of a sudden is trying to also figure out a way to accommodate, you know, maybe orders coming in through three different delivery services. When I went to dig in and saw how this system worked, it was just after being there for 15 minutes, I was like so stressed out. I had to leave because there's just orders streaming in and people running around. And it was amazing to me that anybody got their order correctly and on time, given really how chaotic, the whole system is right now.
Super interesting stuff. And for those of you who follow me on social media, I'm going to be sure and tweet this story out after the program because I want you to read it for yourself. There's a lot of really interesting information there. Elizabeth Dunn, thank you so much for being with us today. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
You bet. All right, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we are talking Super Bowl and Sundance back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. So this past week, I did a cool thing that I've never done before, and it was really cool.
What'd you do?
I went to the Sundance Film Festival, which I've never done. Griffin, I wish you were there. I know you have so much film knowledge in your head. You know a lot.
I'm very jealous, I'll just say.
I absolutely could see you there. I thought of you several times there. I thought, oh man, Griffin would love this. It was a really cool vibe. It was, I don't know. I didn't know what to expect since I had never been there. But of course, as a result of going, I was watching a lot of stories and just kind of seeing what, because when you're in it, it's hard to tell what's happening around you.
There's just so much going on.
There's so much going on. Yeah. I mean, it's a little alpine town, Park City, on a very steep hill. And, you know, you could just walk around and be like, look, everyone's bundled up and watching movies. Great. There's long lines. Great. And not know what's going on. But there's a lot of big deals that happen at Sundance. It's it is still also a marketplace in addition to being a place where people just go to watch films.
Yeah. It's funny to me how it became that, too.
Yeah.
It's weird that this film fest for indie movies in the mountains,
right,
became a 1 week like basically spending festival for major corporations,
like
the
right.
biggest companies in the world, some of the biggest companies in the world now descend on this little town and duke it out with each other trying to spend the most money for these releases that they're interested in.
Yeah, you know, we could do a whole other segment just on hotels and Airbnb in Park City, Utah.
Yeah.
Because I was looking just out of my own curiosity. It was like, okay, here's what a hotel costs now. What is it in 6 months when nothing is happening? Because you have two things converging. You have you have Sundance, but you also have Ski Time.
Yeah.
And so you have these very intimidating looking ski slopes all pointing towards downtown. and so some of the hotels are unbelievably expensive, and some of the people put their homes up on Airbnb for, you know, $3,000 a night because they can.
Yeah.
Because Park City is really tiny.
Yikes.
So you got to book way in advance. I mean, I was almost thinking I should get my hotel now for next year.
Honestly, you know when it's going to be.
That's
so
right.
Yeah, you might as well.
It's
if you know you're going to go.
Yeah, it's difficult. But it was really cool. And so I was, a lot of outlets wrote about it. There is a sense in the air that after last year, it was kind of quiet. Everybody was kind of going, and I think we even talked about this, Griffin, that people were going, well, we saw this big buying spree from Netflix and Hulu and Amazon, and people went in and just spent gobs of money and bought all these things. And then last year it was like, okay, that's cooled off.
Well, because they would go in and spend, you know, $10 million right. for the rights to release a movie, and it might be a bomb. And often they were. And you're in an environment where the atmosphere is very peaked.
That's
and everyone's excited about these movies, and everyone's watching them at the same time and get like really jacked up. And
that's
then. You end up dropping like $12 million or something on something that doesn't do anything at the box office.
That's right.
It doesn't always translate, to the actual...
Yeah, it doesn't translate outside of Sundance.
To the marketplace, yeah.
Yeah, because you can do some really great marketing and get people to fill a theater and line up around the block. And like there was a line to everything.
Yeah, this story in Variety about what did end up getting spent this year mentioned movies like one called Patty Cakes, another called The Birth of a Nation that had... a bunch of reasons for its demise, but still, they were movies that were spent that the company spent a ton of money on at Sundance, and you don't even I hardly even remember
that.
Those titles.
Right.
So you look at the titles, you're like, did that come out? I didn't know.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. My favorite people to kind of eavesdrop on while there, you know, there's plenty of people like doing deals and people looking for a deal. You know, there's that. That's fine. That does nothing for me, because that's what you expect.
You didn't go to make some deals.
I mean, I certainly went. I had some great conversations about my own projects.
Oh yeah,
with some people that you know some because since I do documentary work, I like absolutely had some great conversations. And then on behalf of the Midwest Independent Film Festival, there was an event that I co-hosted that was really fun and had a lot of interesting conversations at that. But my favorite people to eavesdrop on were people who do not care about the industry. They were just like, I live in Utah. I want to see some good movies before other people. They didn't care if there were famous people in them. They didn't care if it was sold out or if they were the only people in the theater. They were just like, we have a plan, and we're here to just watch some movies.
Oh, it's nice to think that even exists.
I know. Well, it's very charming.
It reminds you of what it must have been at some point.
That's right.
And like this film festival was at one point just a place to go see movies. Now it's just like an industry event.
That's right. Well, I'll be honest. A couple of people just in... I mean, I met so many interesting people. A ton of people from here that I didn't know until I got there. There was a couple people from LA that I met, and lots of interesting people, and some people that I know from New York that were there and all that. But a couple of people got into Hollywood mode. And I think maybe because they know I work at a film festival also. And so they were like, oh, I'll sell her on this idea. Like, you don't just submit your film. If it's good, we'll, you know, think about it. But a couple of people kind of like name checked someone to me, which I cannot stand. I have no tolerance for anything pretentious like that.
You drop something. Can I pick that up?
Yeah. Can I pick up all the celebrity names that you just named? So what I did each time that happened, I would say, how did you feel in that experience? I like took it away from them. I was like, that's interesting. I've heard that person is really kind. Is that true? And I took it right to the most human hippy dippy thing I could, because I was just like, I'm not going to play that. I can't. I don't. It doesn't interest me.
And then you're probably in the wrong place. I mean, I bet you have to steel yourself or expect some of that energy when you get there.
I expected a lot more of it, to be honest.
Oh, well, that's good.
What inspired me the most, I had a lot of interesting conversations with really creative people that weren't about like star power. They were just about doing cool work. Canon Camera had they're partners with the film festival. Let me say that. But they had this cool creative studio that it was like three stories of pop-up. Like there was a photo studio. There was photo editors showing off their editing tools. There was cameras up with like powered up batteries in them, pointed at the street. So you could mess with different lenses and see if like what you could do with them.
It's very cool.
And a lot of people from the company standing around going like, what are you working on? What are you doing? how can we help you? I mean, they were really, it was really not about deals. It was about how can you do the work that you want to do? And there was a woman, there was a raffle for some new gear, and a woman, very young woman, won it. And she was like, oh, I've never won anything. This is going to help me so much. You have no idea how badly I needed this. And like stuff like that.
Yeah,
that makes
great.
Me so happy. And I was so inspired by that.
That's really nice. Really cool. But you said it was cooling off last year. And then this year,
well, not cooling off like popularity, but it seemed like the folks that came in and bought up a bunch of stuff, they weren't doing that last year. So I think there was this sense of like, oh, that trend has ended. You know, they bought.
But
last year was much more conservatively.
It was a lull.
Yeah.
But this year, they did see some record
prices
for some of these titles. Yeah. Mindy Kaling's movie called Late Night. She stars.
$13 million, I think.
Wrote 13. That sold for $13 million. The Report, a political thriller, and Brittany Runs a Marathon, which is a heartwarming comedy. Apparently, I haven't seen it.
Yeah,
I can't say.
Well,
but those both got $14 million.
There was I think there's a bigger conversation about kind of. You know, I always think the creative work out in the world is always a reflection of what's happening in our inner lives. It's always been that way. Whatever's happening politically, we see either satire to counter it or something completely opposite. I think everybody's real tired because it seemed like the things that did the best at Sundance this year were pretty light.
Right.
There were things people wanted to be happy about. There were things people left smiling. Like, I think last year and the year before, there was a lot of really dark and heavy stuff, and we had an appetite for it then. This year, much lighter.
And you see streaming companies buying comedies. When you see like $13 million for a comedy, you think, okay, I don't even know what those numbers mean. But comedies don't do that well at the box office anymore. That's more of a risk.
Yeah.
But for a streaming company, they know that people like to just pop those on. So you might not buy a ticket for it, but they do have value to a streaming company. And it's all... Everyone has different objectives and different price points. It's like a weird mishmash. And I just think it's so funny that they all get together in the mountains once a year for some reason.
I know. And it's such a beautiful place. Like if you just stop and look straight up for a minute, you're like, this is gorgeous. I mean, the mountains going into Park City don't even look real. So it's this very beautiful environment.
And then you came back to negative 50.
Yeah, I came back to
on Wednesday.
I mean, flying back into Chicago, I was looking out the window going, oh man, this
can
is
I go back? Take me back.
And you know, at the airport when I left Utah, like two gates over was a flight boarding to Miami. And I was like, I mean, I got a couple of miles. I could maybe figure this out. I got something to do there just for a couple of days. I'll figure it out.
Doing the biz lunch remote from Miami.
I mean, other hosts on this station do some remotes. Like we can get in on that Apple vacation thing and do the biz lunch remote from somewhere sunny and beautiful. I think we've earned that, Griffin. We have. Let's get that worked out.
All right.
We're going to take a little break, get you to news, all that good stuff back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. Always grateful to you for sharing part of your Saturday with us. Still lots to do on the program. And because Super Bowl time is upon us, how could we possibly do the Business Lunch show without taking a look at those beloved Super Bowl ads? And so joining us to talk about them, EJ Schultz, who is the assistant managing editor at Ad Age, is here with us. EJ, thanks so much for coming back to the program.
Great being with you.
So talk us through this year. I've intentionally not watched any of them early. I know a lot of them are available online. But what are we seeing in terms of the Super Bowl ads? It's such a genre in and of itself that always stirs controversy or gets people talking. What are the ones you are most looking at this year?
As of last count, there have been 30 ads already released, and we're expecting somewhere in the order of 60 to run during the game. I think the big theme this year is brands really aren't taking any kind of risks whatsoever, according to the ads we've seen so far. You know, in the past, you've seen some brands take a little bit of a political statement, you know, risking whatever backlash, but also benefiting from the attention that gets. This year, most of the stuff we've seen is very celebrity-driven, humor-driven kind of stuff, pretty lighthearted. One of the more interesting ones, we haven't seen it yet, but on Friday, the Washington Post came out and said they're going to run an ad. And that one is a serious ad that could get some reaction, considering sort of what's going on in the environment. They're going to be basically doing an ad supporting journalists and the work that journalists are doing all over the world, which obviously could be seen as, you know, a little bit of a could get a reaction, of course, from Donald Trump, right, who has sort of used the media, you know, has critiqued the media, of course, along the way. That one, I think, will get some attention. Beyond that, some funny ones I've seen so far include Hyundai, which sort of is using Jason Bateman in their ad. He sort of acts as a elevator operator. He goes long, up and down different floors, and he's sort of pointing out different experiences that people dread. Like one floor is someone getting a root canal, another floor is someone getting the middle seat of an airplane, and then the whole idea of the ad is to say that car shopping normally is one of those bad experiences, but Hyundai is promoting their own car shopping experience as something better than that.
There you go. And you know, it's interesting. In the last segment, we were just talking about how the vibe at Sundance Film Festival seemed much more lighthearted this year. And people really, including the big studios and streaming services that were backing films and buying them up, tended to gravitate to lighter things. That seems to be what the appetite is. And I'm hearing that kind of mirrored in what you're saying about Super Bowl ads this year.
Yeah, and I think the reason for that with the Super Bowl is that this is a television event that reaches 100 million people, at least. It's one of the only real mass marketing vehicles left in advertising. And so when you're reaching 100 million people, chances are you're reaching people of all different political opinions. And so if you have a mass marketed brand like a Pepsi or a Hyundai, you don't want to risk upsetting half of your consumer base by taking a stand on anything. Of course, the risk in doing that is you don't really stand out and you don't get a lot of attention. So that then forces you to come up with something that's funny enough or witty enough to break through.
Sure, sure. And so other than Washington Post having their piece that they're going to release in support of journalism and journalists, what other PSAs are we looking at this year, or should we expect? Because I know in years past, that very chilling one of the woman pretending to order a pizza, in fact calling 911 against domestic violence. So are we do we expect something like that vein this year as well?
I've yet to hear about anything that is that serious. Budweiser is using it in one of their ads to promote the use of wind power, which I guess could be seen as sort of taking an environmental stand. However, they're basically just kind of talking about how they use wind power in their own operations. So I don't think it'll be seen as preachy or anything like that that might draw backlash.
Right. And so which ones are most surprising to you this year that maybe, I know you're saying not many of them seem to be taking a risk, but what did stand out as kind of surprising?
It's interesting that we're noticing several ads making use of robots, sort of using robots as a foil or sort of playing off artificial intelligence. There's a Planters ad, for instance, that has some guys sitting around talking to Pringles, talking about the Pringles chips, and the plot has something to do with the Alexa speaker sitting there and pointing out that the Alexa has no ability to taste the chips. The other one, Michelob Ultra, the beer, which has always had, you've done ads sort of promoting the beer as something that's good to drink after you work out because it's lower calories. But they have a lot of robots in their ad, and they're saying, you know, don't. They're positioning the robot as like someone who works out too much and takes it way too seriously and can't enjoy having fun and having a couple beers after they work out. So the final scene is this robot sort of peering in the bar, looking sad because it doesn't know how to drink beer.
Sad robots always get a laugh. That's always going to be fun.
Right.
It's always going to work. And so in watching social media for the last couple of weeks and just kind of having an ear to the ground as you do, what has been the most anticipated ad, or maybe it's one that isn't out yet?
I've got to tell you, like I've been covering the Super Bowl for 8 years, and so far things seem kind of flat. I don't really see it. Usually by now you have an ad released early that's getting a lot of attention or getting a lot of chatter, and so far I haven't really seen anything that's broken through to that degree. Now maybe that'll change come the Super Bowl. You know, there could be some surprises, stuff we haven't seen yet, stuff that'll get attention or either create a massive backlash. But so far, things you know, it looks like it could be sort of boring, to be honest.
Interesting. I feel like in years where the Super Bowl ads have been a little more subdued, that's when we've ended up seeing something really outrageous on social media happen.
Right. Yeah. There's that. That's always the trap for brands that are trying too hard on social media. May end up having to put their foot in the mouth later.
Right. Exactly. Or sometimes they come in and do something really cool. I'm thinking of like the. Let's see. How many years ago was that? The loss, all the power went out, and Oreos kind of jumped in on the market.
Right. Yeah, that was sort of a breakthrough. But that stuff has become so passe that all brands are doing that now that it's just really harder to break through.
That's a very good point. Well, we shall see. And of course, I'll be tweeting out, for those of you who follow me on Twitter, I'm going to be sharing many of the pieces, EJ, that you have written for Ad Age. And there's so much there about all these ads coming. And of course, we'll be looking to you on social media and on Ad Age for your analysis after the game.
Excellent.
Great. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, more of this here on 720 WGN. WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for hanging out with us today. So, in the last segment, we were talking about Super Bowl ads, which I think is, that's always an interesting topic to me because it's always kind of got its finger on the pulse of things. You know, we saw that I mentioned the domestic violence PSA that ran a couple of years ago in which a woman, and you can just hear this fearful voice and pretending to order a pizza, but in fact, she's calling 911. And that was kind of in response to a lot of domestic violence incidents with players that, you know, created a lot of controversy. But it's interesting to hear how people are kind of have this appetite for low risk, high comedy value this year. But another issue, as we're talking about football and thinking of it in more local terms, is I don't know if you heard on the news a little bit ago, right here from my own newsroom, and that is the Bears are switching Soldier Field sometime this year during this season, 2019. No more paper tickets because of counterfeit issues and just the matter of dealing with all of them. They will be switching to mobile tickets only.
Right. Yeah. Mobile only ticket entry to Soldier Field for all games. So there would be no such thing. I'm reading from the Sun Times. There'd be no such thing as souvenir tickets or ticket stubs for the Bears' historic 100th season in the NFL.
Oh, that's a really interesting time to do that, too. Because
that
feel
is
like
funny.
So
yeah.
Many people would want that ticket
as a souvenir.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is. Yeah. Well, this happens in every industry when it changes to digital. People miss the analog sort of eccentricities of whatever. Just every portion of the experience has just changed a little bit.
Yep.
And you miss the little things.
I mean, we saw that in publishing, right? As the Kindle happened, publishers had more of an appetite to release like 1,000 or a couple hundred of a very beautifully handbound book. We saw this in music. Suddenly there was so much streaming happening that you know, record companies would put out like a small pressing of actual vinyl, things like that. So there'll be something.
I'm reading this story and I keep expecting to get to the paragraph where it says, but you can use a paper ticket, but it's not coming.
No, it's all,
you know, it is very surprising. That's going to be a pretty jarring change, I think, for people. But here's a quote. We feel confident fans will benefit from the safety features of having tickets only accessible from a mobile device, including drastically reducing ticket fraud. That's team president Ted Phillips. He said in a letter to season ticket holders.
I mean, I can't wait for the absolute meltdowns that are going to come from people that are like, I didn't bring my phone charger today. I cannot get in. I have these wonderful seats. Like, that's going to happen so much.
I guess that the response to that is you can have mishaps with paper ticket. You know, you can lose a
misplace
paper ticket.
Them. That's true.
That's true, but it's just a change, you know, and it's always a little tricky. Although I imagine that a lot of the ticket sales are happening this way already.
Yeah.
So they just feel like, what's the difference? Let's just make it easier for everybody. But I don't know. I do expect it to be at least rocky in the beginning.
Change always is.
It always
Even
is.
If it's for the better, people always kind of gripe, you know. I mean, last time Facebook changed their logo font, people were angry. Like, no one likes to. Like, people were not wired for it.
Oh, yeah.
There's a story in MarketWatch that's really interesting about if we zoom back out to the NFL at large and to the Super Bowl, that fake Super Bowl tickets and merchandise, it's a $24 million business for criminals.
I guess this is the kind of thing they're hoping to protect against.
That's right. I mean, that's significant. And especially for something like, I think a lot of emotions get get wrapped up in big games like Super Bowl, even championship games leading up to it. People, you know, have all these emotional reasons of like, I want to take my grandfather there. He never saw that. You know, I know this was happening when the Cubs won the World Series. Like a lot of people were making these very emotional pleas, but then you would see people taking advantage of that because you want to believe that I can take my grandfather to this game. Oh, I can have this access. I found the tickets I was looking for. I think you sometimes can make a leap of faith. And that's when people like prey on that and they rip you off.
Yeah, listen to this, though. So between takedowns related to Sunday's much hyped game in Atlanta. Let's see. law enforcement agencies seized almost 285,000 items of all sorts of fake sports related gear merchandise. And they were worth, an estimated $24.2 million. And that's up 54% from last year.
See, that's the thing. Smart people are on both sides of the law, right? So it's not like a dumb... I mean, there's plenty of dumb criminals, but there's plenty of dumb non-criminals too, right? So it's like smart people, you figure out ways to defraud people and you figure, that's the thing.
Sure, yeah.
So I am not surprised at all that 54% increase.
But why this year?
I don't know why this year, but I just feel like, of course, people are figuring out ways to like make fake tickets and I don't know, just as technology advances, I feel like there's more and more ways to rip people off.
Oh, of course. I mean, we spent 15 minutes on John Williams' show talking about the Fire Festival, which is a whole can of worms. But yeah, no, it's totally true that, I mean, we've always had scammers in America.
Sure.
That's a time-honored tradition. But the digital economy does seem to open it up. You know, you're able to play with your identity so much more.
Right.
And there's a million different ways now, to get at people, I guess.
Right. Well, shame on them. other note on Super Bowl, which I think is interesting. We've talked before, Griffin, about how it's less of an event to sit down and like watch something. Everybody's, you stream it, you watch it on your own time. So many people even use podcasts and radio that way. Some people aren't listening live, they listen later. And that's just kind of behavior that's changing, and a lot of broadcast is adapting to that. But Super Bowl and Oscars and things like that, those are those things where you kind of have to watch it live. It's not as cool to watch the Oscars later or watch the Super Bowl later. Although I know people that have DVR'd the Super Bowl.
I can't really imagine doing that.
You'd have to completely like not look at your phone, not talk to people, like don't spoil it for me. But there was a decline last year, about a 7% decline last year in watchers. And so there was some speculation right after the Super Bowl last year that maybe it too was going to go the way of, just overall TV viewing, like appointment viewing, where you wouldn't, on Monday nights, this is the show that comes on. No, you watch it when you watch it. But it seems like there's an expected rebound this year. So NFL viewing was up this season anyway.
Right.
And so everybody is anticipating a much bigger Super Bowl audience.
Well, and there was some speculation that was tied to the protests and just a general sourness in the league a couple of years ago, which does seem to have faded a little bit. But also it seems like the games have just been really good this year.
That's right.
A sort of subjective take. And also, I don't know because I don't watch that much.
Right.
But there is I've heard that. And there is a feeling in the air that it's just been good, So people are more excited this year.
I've said this many times, and I'll say it again. I love to have to look at Twitter during events like that, like an awards show or a sporting event, something like that. I love to watch Twitter and just see the conversation.
Yeah.
And sometimes if there's a game I don't really care about, something like that, but like I'll look at Twitter and see everyone's freaking out about something. You you want to put it on because you're like, oh, wait, what just happened?
Right.
Sometimes you'll just see like, oh, my God, that was unbelievable. #Bears. And you're like, oh, what just happened? What's going on? So I think that is, a really interesting moment that we're in that we can kind of watch. It's like watching sports with all of our friends. And you can kind of pick and choose that way, because if it seems quiet on Sunday, you're like, meh, nothing's happening on that game. But if everyone's freaking out suddenly, you're like, maybe I do care about this game.
Watching the game with all your friends and all the people that you don't like and hate.
Right, and all the people that you really want to block. Millions
just
of people on
everyone,
the internet. That
just
you
everyone. I'm looking more at this counterfeit ticket and merchandise story. Yeah. This is a number that I don't know if I'm blown away by it, but it's just not something I'd ever thought about. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development estimated that the global economy was hurt by counterfeit goods every year worth an estimated how much? Like, what is the value of all the counterfeit goods in the world for a year?
God.
It's an impossible question. I'll tell you. It was $461 billion. Just that's the counterfeit industry globally.
For everything?
Just anything. Anything you got.
Counterfeit from like counterfeiting money to fraudulent
I guess so, yeah.
Tickets.
Yeah, I wonder if money is included. Yeah.
Because that seems like
it's counterfeit goods, so I don't think that would mean
that's right.
actual
okay.
cash.
That's
yeah.
right. So that's like fake autographs at the lowest point to, yeah. you know.
Or counterfeit Super Bowl tickets.
Right. Yikes. $461 billion.
Hey, stop doing that, guys.
Yeah, don't.
Enough of that.
Also, I'm very glad that I am not the person in charge of coming up with that number.
I know. I mean, who knows if that number is right or what it means exactly.
That would be a nightmare.
I like that somebody tried. And the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, that seems like they'd be the ones to do it, right?
Who else is going to do it with them? Interesting. That's a very, very interesting stuff. So, you know, always lots of backstories to any sort of big sporting event. And Super Bowl, of course, is one of the biggest. All right. So we're going to take a little break and then we're going to check in with Scott Catoon and see what's happening on the Startup Showcase today. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN.